Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 1, The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction, Text 3. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Super Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the cause of the cosmic manifestation, appeared in the dynasty of Yadu. Please tell me elaborately about his glorious activities and character from the beginning to the end of his life. Purport. In this verse, the words Kritavan Yani indicate that all the different activities Krishna performed while present on earth are beneficial to human society. If religionists, philosophers, and people in general simply hear the activities of Krishna, they will be liberated. We have described several times that there are two kinds of Krishna Katha, represented by Bhagavad Gita, spoken personally by Krishna about himself, and Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Shukadev Goswami about the glories of Krishna. Anyone who becomes even slightly interested in Krishna Katha is liberated. Kirtanad eva Krishnasya mukta sangaha param vrajet. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 3, Text 51. Simply by chanting or repeating Krishna Katha, one is liberated from the contamination of Kali Yuga. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore advised, Yare dakho tare kaho Krishna upadesh. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Leela, Chapter 7, Text 128. This is the mission of Krishna consciousness, to hear about Krishna and thus be liberated from material bondage. Kindly repeat the translation. The Super Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the cause of the cosmic manifestation, appeared in the dynasty of Yadu. Please tell me elaborately about his glorious activities and character from the beginning to the end of his life. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desha Tarine Mukam karoti vachalam pangum langhayate girim yat kripatam aham vande shri gurun dina tarinam vancha kalpataru bhyascha kripa sindho bhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha namo mahavadanyaya krishna prema pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya नामने गौरत्विषे नमः पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तिशक्तिकम् आराध्यो भगवान् व्रजेशतनयस् तद्धाम वृन्दावनम् रम्या काचिदुपासना व्रजवधो वर्गेण या कल्पिता श्रीमद्भागवतं प्रमाणममलं प्रेमापुमर्थो महान् श्रीचैतन्य महाप्रभोर्मतमिदं तत्रादर न परः हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण Rather different experience being here in this large pandal compared to the small temple hall. But it's nice, on the occasion of Janmashtami, we can all sit and comfortably hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Yesterday, we were discussing the last few verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, 9th canto, chapter 24. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We were in the last two verses actually. In these two verses, Shukadev Goswami actually summarizes all the pastimes of Krishna when he advented here about 5,000 years ago. He appeared in Mathura, immediately left for Vrindavan, performed many wonderful loving pastimes in Vrindavan, then from there on eventually went to Dwarka. He married many wives, begot hundreds of sons, performed sacrifices, lived the life of an ideal grihastha, and then when the time came to wind up his pastimes, he initiated a misunderstanding between the family members. Before that, of course, he spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And before his departure from the world, he instructed Uddhava. The celebrated Uddhava Gita appears in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he returned finally to his abode, Goloka Vrindavan, in his original form. In the purport to the previous verse, the second last verse of the 9th canto, chapter 24, Srila Prabhupada gives a very important reason, or the most important reason rather, for Krishna's advent into this material world. And I'll read that section of Srila Prabhupada's purport. Quote, "The real purpose of Krishna's appearance, however, was to manifest how one can take part in loving affairs with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Reciprocations of loving affairs in ecstasy are possible only in Vrindavan. Therefore, just after his appearance as the son of Vasudev, the Lord immediately left for Vrindavan. In Vrindavan, the Lord not only took part in loving affairs with his father and mother, the gopis and the cowherd boys, but also gave liberation to many demons by killing them. So very interesting, unquote. So very interesting purport by Srila Prabhupada here. What is the real reason for Krishna's advent? Yes, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna does say, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma sansthapanarthaya sambhavam yuge yuge. I descend for three purposes, for rescuing or saving or protecting the devotees, the sadhus. I come here for destroying the miscreants, vinashaya cha duskritam, and for establishing dharma, dharma sansthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So in every yuga I advent for these three purposes. Yes, of course that is true. Krishna always speaks the truth. In one lecture Srila Prabhupada mentions, Krishna does not descend into this world to speak lies. So whatever he speaks is the truth. So when he speaks, when he says that he descends for these three purposes, it is of course very true. Yesterday we were reading from an earlier verse of the 24th chapter of the 9th canto, in which Shukadev Goswami explains that the real purpose for Krishna's advent is his mercy, his compassion. He wants to bestow his mercy upon all the conditioned souls of this world. In fact, the entire material world is created for this purpose, so that the rebellious living entities who have wanted to be independent of Krishna, who wanted to be false enjoyers in separation from Krishna, could somehow or the other be brought back to their right senses, that their deviant mentality could be corrected, rectified, and then they could be brought to the spiritual world, which is the real home of the spirit soul. So here then we have four reasons for Krishna's advent. And here Krishna is giving another reason, which is of course connected to the first four. It is a part of the first four, but still it highlights a very special feature, almost like an internal reason for Krishna's advent into this world. And that is, I'll read that sentence again. The real purpose of Krishna's appearance, however, was to manifest how one can take part in loving affairs with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, Krishna's advent in this world is for the purpose of inviting all of us to participate in his loving pastimes. This is actually Krishna's purpose for adventing. And what kind of pastimes is Krishna specifically inviting us to? He performs a variety of pastimes. He speaks Bhagavad Gita, he goes to Hastinapur and Indraprastha, spends time with the Pandavas, he spends time in Dwarka with his dear associates there, he goes to many other places and meets many other devotees. In his various innumerable incarnations, he performs so many pastimes and bestows his mercy on so many different types of devotees. So which type of loving affairs with the Lord is Srila Prabhupada referring to here? In the very next sentence, he clarifies that. He reveals that, the answer to that. He says, reciprocations of loving affairs in ecstasy are possible only in Vrindavan. Therefore, the purpose for Krishna's advent, really speaking, the essential purpose, the most intimate or the ultimate purpose for Krishna's advent, is to give us a chance to enter into Vrindavan. So we can all participate, we can first hear about, understand, and eventually enter into Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. Now the question is sometimes asked by devotees or by anyone. Krishna was born in Mathura. Why did he make an arrangement for himself to be transferred to Vrindavan? Why did he not just perform his pastimes in Mathura? And Srila Prabhupada again answers that. Therefore, just after his appearance as a son of Vasudeva, Lord immediately left for Vrindavan. Why? Because it is only in Vrindavan that such loving affairs in ecstasy are possible. Such transcendental reciprocation of devotional ecstasy between the Lord and his devotees is found in its highest manifestation ever possible in Vrindavan. So Vrindavan is such a special place. And also later on in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadev Goswami explains, not only is he here to attract the conditioned souls to Vrindavan, but even more specifically, Krishna's advent is meant for his dear devotees. Anugrahaya bhaktanam manusham dehamasthitah bhajate tadrishi krida yah shrutva tatparo bhavet. This comes in the 33rd chapter of the 10th canto. And this ultimately is the reason for Krishna's advent. Anugrahaya bhaktanam. Anugraha means mercy. Anugrahaya means for the sake of bestowing mercy. Upon whom? Bhaktanam. So even though it is completely true that the Lord descends to bestow His mercy upon all the conditioned souls in the material world, very specifically, the purpose of His advent is to bestow His mercy on the devotees. Anugrahaya bhaktanam. And therefore, manusham deham asthitaha. Therefore, He takes on or He appears in a human-like form. Manusham deha. He situates Himself or He accepts a form that resembles a human being. Now, this does not mean that Krishna's appearance in Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world is different from what He appears when He comes here to this material world. There are two Vrindavans. One is the original Vrindavan in the spiritual world. The word Paravyoma means the spiritual sky. Para means spiritual, Vyoma means the sky. So the Goloka Vrindavan in the spiritual world is called Paravyoma Vrindavan. The Vrindavan in the spiritual sky. In order to distinguish it from the Vrindavan that appears here in the material world, which is called Bhauma Vrindavan. The word Bhauma comes from the word Bhumi or the earth. Now both these Vrindavans are the same. There is no difference between these two Vrindavans. Nevertheless, in order that we understand clearly and we distinguish between the two, the words Paravyoma and Bhauma are utilized. So, when Krishna comes here and He performs pastime in Bhauma Vrindavan, He comes in His self-same original transcendental form, Satchidananda Vigraha. Srila Prabhupada explains in several purports that this is Narakriti. Nara Akriti. Akriti means a form. Nara means a human. So His original form very much resembles a human being. Or rather, we should put it the other way around. The form of the human being resembles the form of Krishna. So Krishna's original form is exactly as we see Him in Bhauma Vrindavan. He has two arms, He has two legs, He has a nose and ears and eyes and lips exactly like a human being. But He's never a human being. He's always the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He only appears like a human being. When he appears in the society of animals, he appears like an animal. When he appears in the society of the aquatics, he appears like a fish, as he did during the Matsya incarnation. Similarly, when he appears in the society of humans, he not only appears like a human, but he also acts like an ordinary human. But at no time is he a human. He is always the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Jiva Goswami comments in this regard that actually it is only out of his kindness, it is out of his mercy, that Krishna descends into this material world in his original two-armed form that appears so human-like. He appears in a way that we can all see him with our ordinary senses. But we should not think that because he looks like us, he's one of us. He acts like he's one of us because that gives him and his devotees transcendental pleasure. Therefore, in the verse that I just quoted, Tadrishi bhajate tadrishi krida, it means that he enjoys such transcendental pastimes which are very human-like. And therefore these pastimes become very charming, very enchanting, because the Almighty, All-Powerful, Omniscient, Omnipresent, Omnipotent, Supreme Personality of Godhead acts like such an ordinary human being. So the contrast is so great that it evokes a sensation or a feeling of charm or enchantment or wonder in a devotee's heart. We all have heard the two words, rasa and tattva. Tattva means truth. Rasa means a kind of mellow in relationships. So in tattva or in truth, Krishna is always the Supreme Lord, the origin of everything. But in rasa, he doesn't enjoy playing the Lord. In rasa, he likes to be like an ordinary cowherd boy who is extraordinarily charming and beautiful. So the contrast between the rasa and the tattva is significant. Because Krishna does not like to act as God, he likes to act as an ordinary human or an ordinary cowherd boy. So the greater the contrast between the rasa and the tattva, the more enchanting and wonderful the pastimes become. And these pastimes, this contrast becomes the greatest in Vrindavan. In Vaikuntha, he is in his four-armed form. But that apart, even if he had, let's say for argument's sake, a two-armed form in Vaikuntha, there is still the sense of him being the Supreme Lord. So therefore the residents of Vaikuntha, they are pure devotees, but in their love for him, they have that sense of awe and reverence. They have that awareness of Krishna's or Vishnu's godhood. So therefore, the contrast between the rasa and tattva is not that great. The contrast increases a little bit when it comes to Dwarka. It further increases a little bit in Mathura, and it is maximally present in Vrindavan. Because Krishna's activities in Vrindavan are so, at least from an external or apparent point of view, so distant from his ontological position as a Supreme Lord, that is what makes it very, very charming. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his comments in various places that the fact that Krishna played like a child and he stole butter and he cried, etc., is not significant because he stole butter and because he cried like a child. Because after all, even ordinary children cry. Ordinary children may steal things. But what makes it especially charming is that he's doing these things despite the fact that he is the Supreme Lord. Despite the fact that he is Shadaishwarya Sampanna, which means he is endowed with all the six opulences and completeness and perfection, still he acts like an ordinary child. Bhajate Tadrashi Krida. This is the purport of the statement that he comes and enacts beautiful pastimes in human society. Yashrutva, upon hearing which, tat paro bhavet, one will become automatically devoted to him. One's love for him will increase exponentially. Because the pastimes of Vrindavan, something has changed?
The
sound has changed? You find it too much? It's okay? All right. Where was I? Yes. So when we hear about these pastimes of Vrindavan especially, it very naturally and spontaneously evokes devotion for the Supreme Lord. So therefore, the most esoteric or the real internal reason for Krishna's advent in this world is to attract the hearts of his devotees to his Vrindavan pastimes, so that when the devotees leave this world, they give up this body, they will go to Paravyoma Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purports elsewhere also that before they go to Paravyoma Vrindavan, they get a chance to go to Bhoma Vrindavan first. They go to some universe where Krishna has manifested Vrindavan and he is enacting his Vrindavan pastimes. They enter into the pastimes, they are born as some associate of Krishna, maybe a gopa or a gopi or a cow or whatever, and they are trained up. Whatever subtle traces of contamination still exist, however atomic they may be, they are also cleansed from the heart of that devotee. And there is some training given by the eternal associates of the Lord about how the pastimes take place in the Paravyoma Vrindavan. And then once that pastime is wound up by Krishna in that Bhoma Vrindavan, then that particular devotee then gets entrance into Paravyoma Vrindavan. So such wonderful things. So the appearance day of Krishna should spark off in our minds a sense of wonder about Krishna's beautiful pastimes and make us more attracted to him and induce us to hear about these pastimes even more. Srila Prabhupada mentions here that not only does Krishna engage in loving pastimes with his mother and father and the gopis and the cows, but he also engages with the demons. Now we may think, that's not an example of his loving pastimes, is it? Because Krishna is killing the demons. How is it a loving pastime? We can understand the Rasa Leela is a loving pastime. We can understand his taking lunch with the cowherd boys on the banks of the Yamuna is a loving pastime. But how is killing of the demons in Vrindavan a loving pastime? The answer is, because Krishna is the Supreme Absolute Truth, so there is no distinction between his killing and his loving. His killing is also loving. It is also an expression of his love and compassion. Because those demons who were killed by Krishna in Vrindavan, they all go back to Goloka Vrindavan. And generally, when the Supreme Lord kills demons, when Krishna kills demons elsewhere, it is likely, or it more often than not happens, that they merge into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. Sometimes they may go to Vaikuntha and get personal forms as well. But in Krishna, in Vrindavan, we see that the demons actually get a form in Goloka Vrindavan, like Putana got. She got the position of a nurse, like a mother, in Goloka Vrindavan. So this is the exceptional feature of Vrindavan. And Shukadev Goswami winds up the ninth canto by speaking about how Krishna eventually reaches or goes back to the spiritual world. And now he has set the stage, so to speak, for the ninth canto, for the tenth canto to begin. And the first chapter of the tenth canto is entitled The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction. The chapter opens with Parikshit Maharaj continuing his inquiry about the moon dynasty and the sun dynasty to Shukadev Goswami. As we mentioned yesterday in the beginning, there are two Kshatriya families, dynasties, one from the sun god, the other from the moon god. And as Prabhupada explains in the purport to the first verse here, that both these dynasties are glorious because they are filled with many, many kings who are saintly, Rajarishis, very powerful kings who are also exalted devotees of the Lord. So therefore, Parikshit Maharaj appreciates both of them. And in the first verse, he begins and says, "My dear Lord, you have elaborately described the dynasties of both the moon god and the sun god with the exalted and wonderful character of their kings." So he's definitely happy to hear about both these dynasties. As Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has explained, that even though the dynasty of Swayambhuva Manu was explained by Shukadev Goswami from the fourth canto onwards, it is not till in the narration of the descendants of the Surya Vamsha, the solar dynasty, when Lord Ram's pastimes are described, that actually there is more and more sweetness. And when Krishna's pastimes come, then there is even more sweetness. And the sweetness culminates to its ultimate perfection in the pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. So even though Parikshit Maharaj has appreciated the pastimes of both the dynasties, he specifically is keen about the moon dynasty, the Soma Vansha, because it is Krishna who appears in this dynasty. So Parikshit Maharaj is now prodding Shukadev Goswami to tell more about the moon dynasty because Krishna appears there. You see, in this world, when a person is born in a very famous family, then that person becomes famous because of that family. Yeah, let's say a famous, you know, business family like the Rothschild or the Rockefeller, whatever, some big families. He says someone is a Rothschild. Oh, he's a Rothschild. Okay. If someone comes in here from the Rothschild family, oh, someone from the Rothschild family has come here. So the person becomes famous because of the dynasty. So when Krishna appears in the Yadava dynasty, the Yadu dynasty, it's the other way around. It's the Yadu dynasty that becomes famous because Krishna has appeared in that dynasty. Srila Prabhupada gives the example of sandalwood that is found in the Malaya province. Malayaja Chandana. That Chandan or sandalwood, which is found or which is born, so to speak, Ja means born, in the Malaya forests of the Malaya province, is very famous. It's the best quality sandalwood that you can get. And it's so precious that the government actually places restrictions. It's only recently that these restrictions have been relaxed and people can privately grow sandalwood. Otherwise, in India, it is a crime to grow sandalwood. It is an offense. You can be arrested for that. And in our farm now, they have relaxed. You can grow it, but you have to inform the government. And of course, because it is so expensive and so precious, so it's very difficult because thieves have their eyes on it. And it's so fragrant that everybody comes to know when you've planted sandalwood. So it's very easy, and the people around are going to have their evil eye on the sandalwood. So this sandalwood has its own qualities. Now Malaya, the Malaya province also has its own characteristics distinct from sandalwood. But because that sandalwood somehow by providence has appeared in that province, it is known by the name of that province. So it's called Malaya sandal. Malaya sandalwood. So the province of Malaya has become famous because of the sandalwood that grows there. Similarly, the Yadu dynasty, even though famous in its own right because of all the glorious kings who appeared there, that dynasty becomes even more famous because Krishna has appeared in that dynasty. Excuse me, just one moment. Yes. So when we say that Krishna is a Yadava, he's a Yadu, it is a testimony to the fortune of the Yadus. It is not Krishna who is fortunate to be born in the Yadu dynasty, but rather it is a Yadu dynasty that is fortunate actually to have Krishna appearing in that dynasty. Now, he is the light of the Yadu dynasty. The Yadu dynasty becomes glorified because Krishna has appeared there. In the Mukunda Mala Stotra of King Kulashekhara, a very great devotee of the Lord, he offers a very beautiful prayer. And this prayer is also recited by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Jayati Jayati Devo Devaki Janmanasau Jayati Jayati Krishna Vrishni Vansha Pradipaha Jayati Jayati Megha Shyamala Komalango Jayati Jayati Prithvi Bharanasho Mukundaha. King Kulashekhar glorifies Krishna. Jayati Jayati. All glories to that Lord Devaha, who is known as the son of Devaki. All glories to that Krishna, who is Vrishni Vansha Pradipaha, who is the light of the Vrishni dynasty, of the Yadu dynasty. All glories to Krishna, who has the complexion of a rain-filled cloud, and whose body is very tender and beautiful. All glories to that Krishna who is known as Mukunda, who diminishes the burden of the earth. So Krishna is also known as Vrishni Vansha Pradipaha, one who is the transcendental light of the Yadu dynasty. So therefore, Parikshit Maharaj is very eager now. Having heard about the Surya Vansha, the solar dynasty, he is very impatient. He wants to hear about Krishna. So then he asks him several questions. He gets to the point now. He's waited so long till the beginning of the 10th canto to hear about Krishna. So now he asked several questions. O best of Munis, you have also described the descendants of Yadu who are very pious and strictly adherent to religious principles. Now, if you will, kindly describe the wonderful, glorious activities of Lord Vishnu or Krishna, who appeared in that Yadu dynasty with Baladeva, his plenary expansion. So Parikshit Maharaj's first question to Shukadev Goswami in the 10th canto is, please describe the wonderful, glorious activities of Krishna. Viryani. Viryani means the glorious activities. Tatra anshena avatirnasya. So Vishnu or Krishna has appeared with his ansha, his plenary expansion, Sankarshan or Balaram. Srila Prabhupada mentions in several places, because Krishna of Vrindavan is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead and he expands into innumerable expansions, but because he is the original, all these expansions actually reside within his transcendental person. So when Krishna appears in Vrindavan, these infinite expansions are all present within him. All the Narayan forms, the four-armed forms in Vaikuntha, Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, the Matsya incarnation, Kurma, Varaha, all these incarnations reside within Krishna. What a wonderful thing! What a wonderful form is this personality of Krishna. That Mataji has dropped her phone as she went out of the room, so someone may please hand over the phone to her. Otherwise she, yes, thank you. So Krishna in Vrindavan is something truly extraordinary, and Parikshit Maharaj is eager to know about these activities. So because he's there along with his ansha. Now, another interesting point that is mentioned here is that the word anshena also indicates that it is not possible to completely describe or understand the glories and the activities of Krishna. Ansha means a part. So Parikshit Maharaj understood that even though Shukadev Goswami was such an exalted Paramahamsa devotee, nevertheless, it would not be possible for him to describe the glories of Krishna in Purna. Purna means completeness. He would have to describe it anshena, just partially. That's another interesting point Srila Prabhupada makes in the purport here. And then we come to the verse that we just recited today. And I'll only repeat the last line of this purport. This is the mission of Krishna consciousness, to hear about Krishna and thus be liberated from material bondage. Now that's an important statement. It's almost like a mission statement for us. I repeat, this is the mission of Krishna consciousness, to hear about Krishna and thus be liberated from material bondage. So it is very important for us to keep focus on this one sentence, that the mission of our Krishna consciousness movement is to hear about Krishna. And of course, to enable others to hear about Krishna. But if we don't hear about Krishna, how will we enable others to hear about Krishna? When Srila Prabhupada encouraged his devotees to distribute books, he also told them, you must also read these books. Because if someone asks you, what's in this book? And you say, well, you know, I don't know. I'm distributing the books, but I haven't read them. That's not going to create a good impression. So our single most important function in this movement is to hear about Krishna. And whatever be our service, We may be book distributors or pujaris or cooks or managers or whatever we may be. We are all serving Krishna in different ways. But fundamentally, we all have to come together to hear about Krishna. And then we go about doing our other practical services. But if we do not pay attention to this most important activity of hearing about Krishna, we will not be able to properly accomplish the goals of our mission. And therefore, in the next verse, a very important verse, very often quoted by Srila Prabhupada, and the one that he cites in the beginning of the Krishna book, that is the verse that Shukadev Goswami speaks here in text 4. Nivritta tarshay rupagiyamanat bhavau shadashrotra manobhiramat kauttama shloka gunanuvadat puman virajeta vina pashupnat. I'll read Srila Prabhupada's translation. Glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is performed in the parampara system. That is, it is conveyed from spiritual master to disciple. Such glorification is relished by those no longer interested in the false temporary glorification of this cosmic manifestation. Descriptions of the Lord are the right medicine for the conditioned soul undergoing repeated birth and death. Therefore, who will cease hearing such glorification of the Lord except a butcher, a one who is killing his own self? You know, when we read Srila Prabhupada's books, one can gauge the importance of a particular verse not only by how often Srila Prabhupada has cited or quoted or recited that verse himself in his lectures and books, but we can also gauge its importance by how long the purport is to that particular verse. Because Prabhupada deems it important enough to elaborately expound on the meanings and the intricacies of that verse. So this verse also has a very long purport. 1, 2, 3, 4, 4.5 pages of purport. And I just want to summarize the main points of this purport. The first thing that Srila Prabhupada talks about is, yes, it is important to recite Krishna Katha, and it is important to hear Krishna Katha. So the hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam of Krishna Katha, is vital to our spiritual development, vital to the very purpose of our life. But who is fit to recite? In other words, whom should we hear Krishna Katha from? And he gives us two options. One, if we hear the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from liberated persons, this hearing will certainly free us from the bondage of material activities. Now we may say, well, who's a liberated person? That's another big question. So later he clarifies, he has mentioned in the translation itself the parampara system. Even if one is situated in the parampara system and is not personally liberated, but if one sincerely repeats the words of the previous acharyas, one does not concoct anything, one does not present things that are not intended by the previous acharyas, and if one is sincerely following the teachings of the previous acharyas, then one is also eligible to recite the pastimes of the Lord. And then one can hear from such a devotee of the Lord. But then he gives us a second option. He says there are people who hear Krishna Katha from people who are not really devotees of the Lord, but they are professional reciters. And on numerous occasions, Srila Prabhupada cautions us that one should not hear from professional reciters. Many of them are very charismatic, very eloquent, very learned and scholarly. And they also have much musical accompaniment in their singing. So overall, it's very attractive to someone who seeks some kind of piety or perhaps some pious entertainment, or even maybe devotional entertainment. But unless one is in the parampara system, unless one is sincerely following the teachings of the parampara in one's life, unless one is repeating the words of the previous acharyas, such Krishna katha will not have effect. Therefore, Prabhupada quotes the verse from the Puranas, the Padma Purana, A Vaishnava Mukhod Girnam Putam Hari Kathamritam Shravanam Naiva Kartavyam Sarpochishtam Yathapayaha. Just as milk is very nourishing to the human body, good for the body, good for the brain, good for spiritual life, filled with nutrients and vitamins, etc. But if that milk is touched by the lips of a poisonous serpent, it will have a poisonous effect for one who drinks that milk. Similarly, Krishna Katha is very pure, very potent. But if that potent, pure Krishna Katha is spoken by a person who is a professional reciter, who is not repeating the words of the previous acharyas, then that Krishna Katha will have poisonous effect on the minds of the listener. So the question may be asked, who is a devotee? When it comes to qualification for recitation, who is a devotee? Because after all, a professional reciter will also claim that he is a devotee. And they may be devotee of sorts. But are they the kind of devotee that we want to hear from? So the important question arises, who is a devotee? And Srila Prabhupada answers that here in the purport. He says, quote, A devotee is one who has no other motive for reciting Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam than to serve the Lord. Unquote. This is Srila Prabhupada's definition of a devotee reciter. Such a reciter has no other purpose than to serve the Lord and to please Him. A genuine devotee reciter will not do so for the sake of earning some money or gaining some reputation and some name and fame and gaining followers and so on and so forth. So if there is that contamination in the consciousness of the reciter, it will not produce a proper effect on the minds of the listeners. So therefore, one must hear from devotees who are coming in the proper disciplic succession. And as quoted by Shukadev Goswami here, Nivritta Tarshair. Nivritta means released from. Tarshair refers to the word Trishna. In Sanskrit, the word Trishna actually means thirst. Thirst for water, generally. But in this context, it means thirst for Krishna. One who is thirsty for Krishna, one who is hungry for Krishna. And specifically when it says Nivritta Tarshar, it means a thirst for material enjoyment. So we want to be Krishna. We want to have Krishna Trishna. We want to have thirst and hunger for Krishna. But in this world we see there is thirst and hunger for materialistic life. So unless one has been released from such a thirst for materialistic life, one cannot effectively not only speak about Krishna, but one will not even be inclined to hear about Krishna. one will not have that inclination, that enthusiasm to hear about Krishna. Speaking about Krishna is hard enough from one point of view, but hearing is even harder. To tolerate sitting for some time, for 1 hour, 2 hours, hours together hearing about Krishna is not an easy thing. So inasmuch as it is important for the reciter to be qualified, it is also equally important for the listener to be qualified. And Srila Prabhupada mentions here that the ideal combination of the listener and the hearer of Krishna Katha are Shukadev Goswami and King Parikshit. Shukadev Goswami was a perfect reciter. Parikshit Maharaj was a perfect listener. The ideal combination. So the question arises, okay, we've talked about who will be the ideal reciter. What are the qualifications for one who should be the ideal hearer or listener? Prabhupada mentions in the purport that almost anyone suffering from the threefold miseries of material existence will desire to hear the glories of the Lord. Which means basically everyone. Because everyone is suffering the pangs of material existence. However, Prabhupada continues to say, two classes of men, however, will never be interested in hearing the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Those who are determined to commit suicide and those determined to kill cows and other animals for the satisfaction of their own tongues. And the words used here are Pashukna. Puman virajyet vina Pashuknat. Who will not hear the messages of Krishna except one who is a Pashukna? Pashu means an animal, and Gna means to destroy, one who destroys. So Srila Prabhupada gives an interesting thing. The Pashugna in the literal sense means one who kills the animals. That's easy enough to understand. What about committing suicide? What is this all about? So we'll come to that in a few moments. So Prabhupada says, one who is a butcher, one who kills animals and specifically the cows, will become so hard-hearted that he or she will become disinclined to hear about Krishna. That enthusiasm and interest will just not arise. Srila Prabhupada says here, Pashugna means butcher. So that's why we find that there is so much disinterest in hearing about Krishna. Therefore, the kind of life we lead, the kind of food we eat, has such an important bearing on our consciousness and on the kind of subjects that we are inclined to hear about. So by killing cows, we perform such a heinous and grave sin and offense that it deprives us of the greatest benefit of life, which is the inclination to hear about Krishna. That very propensity and urge to want to know about Krishna is destroyed because we kill animals, we kill cows specifically. On the other hand, if we protect cows and keep them happy, the whole human society will be happy. Srila Prabhupada mentions in one purport, if the human society simply keeps cows and bulls joyful, the whole human society will also be happy and joyful. But unfortunately, the human society does not know this secret. It is not such a secret. It's there in the scriptures. So when one protects cows and keeps them happy, the cows happily give milk profusely. And because that cow has given milk very happily, the milk is not only delicious, but it's also very potent. And it can create a kind of a spiritual inclination. It purifies the tissues of the brain, Prabhupada says. And one becomes more inclined to hearing about Krishna. So therefore, a pashugna, one who kills cows, will not be inclined to hearing about Krishna. Now we may say, well, what about those who kill cows but still drink milk? The point is that that milk is not going to be something useful for us. Yes? It's milk that is coming from a dairy industry that is based on cruelty and slaughter. That milk is coming from cows who are not happy, who are not being looked after. How can that cow have the kind of potency that a happy cow would have? The second thing that Srila Prabhupada says here is committing suicide. Those who are determined to commit suicide will not be interested in hearing. What's the purport of that? And he elaborates on that by saying, if one still has a desire for material sense gratification, he is not Nivritta Trishna. In other words, a person who is interested in a very materialistic sort of life is also committing suicide, because he or she is depriving himself or herself of that opportunity to hear about Krishna. You know, there are two words in Sanskrit. One is visha. Visha means poison. If one takes poison, then one dies. In other words, one's physical material body gets destroyed. So when we take poison, we commit suicide. We destroy this body. There's another word called vishaya. Vishaya means a sense object. Vishaya is more dangerous than visha. When we take visha or poison, we just destroy one body. When we take vishaya, we are obliged to take many bodies one after the other. The process of sense gratification of materialistic life in this material world induces us to take birth again and again and yet again, indefinitely. And when one is full of materialistic consciousness, then it is very hard to become inclined towards hearing about Krishna. The next thing Srila Prabhupada speaks about in the purport is about the disease that is afflicting everyone in this world. Bhava roga. Roga means disease, bhava means this material existence. Bhava, to become. The material existence is called bhava, to become, because you repeatedly become diseased, you become old, you become dead, you become born. So you repeatedly become these things. You become a human, you become a cat, you become a dog, you become a tree, you become a demigod. So you constantly become so many things. So it's called bhava, this material existence. It's a disease. It's the fundamental disease. More dangerous than HIV or cholera or tuberculosis or whatever else, or whatever other deadly diseases that may exist in this material world. And medical science cannot find a cure for this bhava roga. And the medicine for this is Krishna Katha. Bhava Aushadha. Aushadha means the medicine. So Shukadev Goswami says that hearing about Krishna is the perfect remedy or the medicine for the terrible disease of bhava roga. So every intelligent person should somehow or the other hear about Krishna in the association of devotees. considering this to be the most important duty in life. Even though we may have many services in our daily life, in the temple, outside the temple, etc., but we should ensure that we always make time available for hearing about Krishna on a regular basis. If we consider other services always more important than hearing about Krishna, eventually what will happen? We will lose the enthusiasm to do those other services. The consciousness with which we will do our other services will be somewhat diluted or even polluted perhaps. So when we hear about Krishna, we get purified and we also become enabled to perform our other services with greater enthusiasm, with greater purity and with greater effectiveness. So even if you want to do your particular services very efficiently and productively for Krishna, it is still very important to come and hear about Krishna regularly. And when we cannot come and physically hear about Krishna in the association of devotees, we can read Prabhupada's books. We should do both. And of course, nowadays, thanks to technology, we also can hear about Krishna on the internet, provided we don't misuse it, of course. Then Shukadev Goswami, or rather, I beg your pardon, it is Parikshit Maharaj speaking. Somehow I've been saying Shukadev, but because these are the questions being asked by King Parikshit. So King Parikshit goes on to say here, in the 5th to 7th verses, and I'll read the translation. Taking the boat of Krishna's lotus feet, my grandfather Arjuna and others crossed the ocean of the battlefield of Kurukshetra, in which such commanders as Bhishma Deva resembled great fish that could very easily have swallowed them. By the mercy of the Lord, my grandfathers crossed this ocean, which was very difficult to cross, as easily as one steps over the hoof print of a calf. Because my mother surrendered unto Lord Krishna's lotus feet, the Lord, Sudarshan Chakra in hand, entered her womb and saved my body, the body of the last remaining descendant of the Kurus and the Pandavas, which was almost destroyed by the fiery weapon of Ashwatthama. Lord Sri Krishna appearing within and outside of all materially embodied living beings by his own potency in the forms of eternal time, that is as Paramatma and as Virat Rupa, gave liberation to everyone, either as cruel death or as life. Kindly enlighten me by describing his transcendental characteristics. Parikshit Maharaj has understood very well the favors that Krishna has done him and his family. After all, he got the name Parikshit because he was examining immediately upon his birth, looking here and there, the four directions for that personality whom he saw within his womb. When Ashwatthama tried to destroy King Parikshit, who was still within the womb of his mother, Uttara, Krishna personally appeared within the womb and encircled him and protected him like that. And Parikshit within the womb was actually able to see Krishna circling him and protecting him. And even when he was born, he was looking in all the directions. Where is that personality that I saw when I was in the womb of my mother? And therefore he got the name Parikshit, because he was always examining the four directions to find out that personality. Krishna also protected not just his mother, but he protected all his grandfathers. The battlefield of Kurukshetra was like a huge ocean of Kauravas and their allies like Bhishma. They were like Timingala fish not fish actually, they are huge mammals perhaps. And they can swallow many, many gigantic whales. That's the size of these living entities, these aquatics. So what chance does a small fish have in front of a Timingala? You know, Timingala is one who can swallow many timis. Timi is also kind of a big aquatic. And one who can swallow them effortlessly is called a Timingala. So Bhishma and others were so powerful on the battlefield. What chance did the Pandavas have? But it was only because of Krishna's presence and his mercy on the battlefield that the Pandavas were saved. And Parikshit Maharaj understands that well. He says, Krishna's lotus feet are like a boat. And sitting in that boat, my grandfathers, the Pandavas, crossed over the ocean of the Kaurava army. And crossing over this ocean was as easy as jumping over the water that is there in the hoof print of a calf. So Parikshit Maharaj is very, very appreciative of Krishna's role, of his glories. He's indebted to Krishna. And he has enormous love for Krishna. And therefore he wants to hear more about Krishna. The second question that Parikshit Maharaj asks Shukadev Goswami is about Balaram. Because he has heard that Balaram was the son of both Devaki as well as Vasudev. How is that possible? So he asked Shukadev Goswami to clarify this. And the third question is all about his different pastimes in Vrindavan, Dwarka, Mathura. Why did Krishna leave the house of his father Vasudev in Mathura and go to Vrindavan? Where did he live with his relatives in Vrindavan? What did he do when he reached Vrindavan and eventually in Mathura and Dwarka? Why did he kill his uncle Kamsa? Although generally to kill one's uncle is considered very sinful, it is not sanctioned in the scriptures. For how many years did he live in Vrindavan, in Mathura, and also in Dwarka? How many queens did he have in Dwarka? Please describe all these things in detail, my dear sage. Please answer all the questions I have asked you. And please also tell me about things that I may not have asked you. Because I have full faith. Shraddhanaya vistritam vaktum arhasi sarvagya. Please speak all these things to me because you know all of them, all of these things. You are sarvagya. And I am a faithful listener. So Parikshit Maharaj emphasizes that faith is something very important in our hearing about Krishna's pastimes. And therefore he's very eager. Pibantam tvan mukham bhojachyutam hari kathamritam. Because of my vow unto the verge of death, I have given up even drinking water. Yet because I am drinking the nectar of topics about Krishna, which is flowing from the lotus mouth of your lordship, my hunger and thirst, which are extremely difficult to bear, cannot hinder me. Parikshit Maharaj had taken a vow to fast unto death, a fasting from water, fasting from food. And he remembered very well at this time the big blunder he had made when he was previously thirsty. What had he done? He was going through the forest. His throat was parched with thirst. And he came to the ashram of Shamika Rishi. He wanted water, but the great sage was absorbed in meditation. He did not notice King Parikshit entering. And therefore he did not offer hospitality to the king. The king was angry. He picked up a dead snake and placed it around the neck of the sage like a garland. And then, of course, he was cursed. Parikshit Maharaj was thirsty then, and he was thirsty now. Remember, we have reached the 10th canto. So he had heard the first 9 cantos. So several days had already elapsed without food, without water. So we can understand he must have been really thirsty. He must have been really hungry. But he remembered, I can't make the mistake I did last time. So I will not let my thirst bother me now. You know, when we are thirsty and hungry, you know, we do become agitated. A hungry person can well become an angry person also. That happened to Parikshit Maharaj. But Parikshit Maharaj has learnt his lesson. Now I cannot afford to make that same mistake. I will not let my thirst and hunger agitate my mind and distract me from Krishna Katha. So I will hear this with attention. And just in case Shukadev Goswami were to doubt his capacity to hear because of the fasting, Parikshit Maharaj is reassuring him here. Oh my dear sage, please do not think that I am a king, I am a royal person, I have been used to all kinds of luxuries in life, and I may not be able to tolerate the pangs of hunger and thirst. I may get very distracted. No. You please continue speaking about Krishna. This hunger and thirst doesn't bother me. It doesn't disturb me now. Because my very soul is being nourished by the nectar of Hari Katha that is falling, that is emanating from your lotus-like mouth. And I am just simply eagerly drinking this with my ears. Pibantam tvan mukham bhoja chutam hari kathamritam. And therefore, I am completely satiated. Please go on speaking more. And I am eager to hear about Krishna in Vrindavan and Mathura and Dwarka. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions that the entire world is suffering because of spiritual thirst. The world is completely unaware of the nectar of Krishna Katha. And it is the purpose of this Krishna consciousness movement to fulfill this need, to fulfill this void in the lives of people, to give them this nectar of the narrations and the holy names of Krishna. So we'll stop here. It's exactly 9:30, 3 minutes over time. Thank you very much for coming here and for your patient hearing. And I hope you all have a wonderful festival all day today and all day tomorrow. We will meet here again tomorrow morning, the same venue, same place, same time tomorrow. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.